It's Wednesday. That means it's time to rumble. Joining me for tonight's Lone Liberal Rumble are Mike Riggs, associate editor and columnist with Reason Magazine and Reason.com, and Lachlan Marquet, investigative reporter with the Heritage Foundation. And thank you both for joining me tonight.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
Let's start out with immigration. Immigration is front and center as the Supreme Court heard the debates, the arguments on it today. And I heard from one of the people who was in the court that it sounds like they're going to basically uphold Senate Bill 1070, is it?
Yeah.
The Arizona law. But, you know, who knows? But right at the moment, for the first time literally since the 1930s, there are more Mexicans leaving America than coming into the United States. A new study by the Pew Hispanic Center has found that the influx of undocumented immigrants has slowed. And so how big a problem is illegal immigration in the United States, and how will the Republican Party continue to try to use this as a cudgel electorally?
Well, I can't answer for the Republican Party because I don't work for it or associate it with it, but I don't think immigration, illegal or legal, documented or undocumented, I don't actually think it's a big problem. I think SB 1070 is a pretty atrocious law. I think it encourages racial profiling. And I take the very radical position of thinking that human capital should be able to go where it's needed. And if that means that there are incentives for people to come into the United States to find work, I think they should be allowed to do that.
I think the issue of mobility is a big one that I think the Pew study really really spotlighted in a very powerful way, because you saw, I think it was 1.4 million immigrants returning to Mexico
right.
over the last year. So,
and
you know, a lot of that probably has to do with the state of the economy more than it has to do with, enforcement measures in the United States. But I think it goes to the heart of the issue. You know, very often we hear that it's either inhumane or unfeasible to attempt to either encourage or coerce illegal immigrants into returning to their country. I think that statistic shows that there's a lot more mobility there than we realize, and that the roots perhaps aren't as deep as a lot of people
claim. Well, it's a complex situation. I mean, from the 19-teens, when they first started keeping track of who was coming across the border, through the 1980s, and there was a lot of activity in the 1960s with the Bracero program, the 1950s and 60s, where they were actually issuing cards for people to come across. Basically, from the 19-teens until the 1980s, what we found was that about 500,000 to 1 million people a year would come north during the picking season, and then almost an identical number of people would go south again. And then Reagan did his amnesty and basically stopped enforcing prosecution of employers. Employers used to be aggressively prosecuted if they hired people who weren't U.S. citizens. When Reagan stopped enforcing those prosecutions of employers, then the meatpacking industry stopped being a place where you could get a good union job. It started becoming the place where the illegal immigrants were working. The construction industry stopped being a place where you could get a good, you know, literally have a lifetime job, the good wage. And, like everything changed, the whole dynamic changed. Isn't it real that we have not an illegal immigration problem, but an illegal employer problem, and we should undo the damage that Reagan did when he stopped enforcing that law?
A great study came out from the Federal Reserve Bank in Kansas City, I believe, last week, saying that the difference between working at a company that has illegal immigrants versus not, the wage difference was something like 50 cents an hour, maybe.
Yeah, after 30 years of Reaganomics.
Right, I can understand.
I mean, when
if
Reagan came into office,
that,
you had 25% unionization in this country. Now
yeah,
it's 8%.
Right, so I can understand if your qualm is then that wages are depressed across the spectrum.
Yes.
I don't think it's a bad thing that people can come from poorer countries to a wealthier country and get money to feed their families back home. I just don't think it's a bad thing. More the merrier.
So you don't book. I'm curious, Lachlan, do you agree that there should not be national borders?
No, I certainly don't agree
with
that.
That's the libertarian position, basically, that there should not be national borders.
No, I don't agree with that.
Of course, national borders.
I mean, you can call it a border, but, you know, so what?
No, I don't think that's the case. I think that, rule of law is particularly important, from the perspective of American identity and the values that we hold dear as a country.
How in a libertarian world, Mike, would you maintain America as America?
Oh, I know. I mean, America's the melting pot, right? I mean, the taco is more popular than apple pie, according to the newest issue of my magazine, Reason Magazine.
So, if Canada offers free health care, so should all Americans be able to go to Canada and get free health care?
You know what? I think if that is part of your calculus for determining where you want to live, if the Canadians will have you.
Well, that's the problem.
I'm not going to. Right.
A lot of Americans over 30 and 40 trying to get into Canada, and they're.
Seen that day coming, right?
Yeah, there you go. More Rumble coming up right after the break.
Wealthy British scion Zach Wilson, investment activist.
Markets, finance, scandal. Find out what's really happening to the global economy with Max Keiser for a no-holds-barred look at the global financial headlines. Tune in to Keiser Report on RT. Permission free. Accreditation free. Transport charges free. Arrangement free. Risk free. Stereotype free. Download free broadcast quality video for your media projects at freevideo.rt.com.
Download the official RT application to your iPhone or iPod Touch from the iTunes App Store. Watch RT live on the go. Video on demand. RT's live broadcasts. And RSS feeds now in the palm of your hand. Question more on RT.com.
Welcome back to tonight's Lone Liberal Rumble. Joining me are Mike Riggs, associate editor and columnist with Reason Magazine and Reason.com, and Lachlan Marquet, investigative reporter with the Heritage Foundation. Let's get back to it. 2 years ago and 4 days ago, the BP oil disaster happened down in the Gulf. Finally, yesterday, somebody was arrested. Turns out it was a guy who's not even an employee anymore. He actually was arrested for tweeting something that wasn't quite accurate. He's a fall guy.
And a lonely engineer, right?
Yeah, a lowly unemployed engineer. And whereas down in Brazil, when Chevron had an oil spill, which was a fraction, I mean, you know, less than a 50th of the size of the BP oil spill, they arrested 13 executives, including an American, took their passports. They're still stuck down there. They're facing serious charges, maybe years in jail. The company, Chevron, has been forbidden from all its drilling operations in Brazil. I mean, how come we're the wimps on the block? I don't get it.
Isn't part of the problem with going after white-collar criminals that you have to end up, you'd have to go after their enablers as well, right? I mean, there's the Wall Street guys, who none of whom have been arrested. They didn't get to be, they didn't have the power that they had independently of government.
But what they were doing was legal because of the deregulation that you guys are so in love with.
Well, I'm not sure it was just deregulation. There may have also been some incentives provided by the government. But BP is another great example. I mean, what was going on with the Minerals and Management Service that BP was allowed to have the shoddy equipment? I mean, if you were going to go after the heads of BP...
So you're in favor of stronger government regulation?
Well, I do think that if you're going to have the Minerals and Management Service saying that it's going to do something, then it doesn't do something. Or in some circumstances, maybe aiding and abetting sort of reckless behavior.
One of the problems was that the Bush administration had cut their funding to the point where they had like one inspector for every 100 wells. I mean,
and wasn't that inspector also like sort of partying with oil execs as well?
I mean, no, actually his boss was. Okay. So you want not only more regulations, but you also want more money for the regulators?
I don't think it's that. I think that what we have is like regulatory capture. I don't know that the best answer to regulatory capture is provide businesses with more people to sway.
Lachlan, jump in here.
You know, if we're going to gauge wrongdoing by the damage that's been done, you know, I think you need to look at, okay, the board of engineers that the administration appointed to gauge the damage that the spill had been done also ended up weighing in on the moratorium on new drilling rigs in the Gulf and decided that that was going to be more damaging to the Gulf Coast economy than even the actual oil spill was.
Right, so they're drilling again.
Well, but what I'm saying is if we're looking for the consequences of what's going on down in the Gulf, you need to look at the, you know, amazing overreaction that has taken place in the political sphere to what happened, you know, has had a far larger impact, potentially could have a far larger impact than the spill itself.
11 men died.
Well, and I'm glad to see that this engineer...
I'm glad. Except a few ducks.
I'm glad to see that... This man who broke the law, I believe it's obstruction of obstruction of justice. He's being charged with.
He sent a phony tweet to his boss.
My point is that when there is wrongdoing, when the law has been broken, people should be prosecuted. But if we're going to gauge wrongdoing on simply the collateral damage that occurred from negligence or something that's not criminal,
neither one of you guys think that Tony Hayward should be extradited from England and be standing trial.
That's a heavy question, Tom. I mean, I think our prisons are pretty full as is. If I could trade, right, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, would I sacrifice Tony Haywood to end the drug war? Yes, sure.
Me too. We agree. Yeah. Amazing. Okay, congressional elections. In an interview with Fox News, Speaker Boehner said this about the Republican prospects of winning the House in November.
I'd say there's a 2 in 3 chance that we win control of the House again. But there's a 1 in 3 chance that we could lose. And I'm being myself, frank. We've got a big challenge, and we've got work to do.
Now, you know, one of the first rules of politics is never say that you're definitely going to win, because then people don't show up to vote, and they don't give you money. Don't say that you're going to lose, because then people don't show up to vote, and they don't give you money. So I think he politically calculated this just right, where the underdog help us out. Don't forget to vote. But... in the real world of things, what is the political calculus here?
Yeah, I think he's trying, you know, he might be trying to downplay expectations a little bit, but just in case. But, you know, I think that 33% chance that he mentioned, I think if Republicans do end up losing the House, you know, we were talking during the break about how, you know, the Tea Party wave that was swept in 2010 hasn't really succeeded in doing much in the way of shrinking government or shrinking the federal budget. So I think if they do end up losing seats, you know, it will be primarily attributable to not following through on the very hefty promises that were made in 2010.
Which raises the perfect question, Mike. What have the Republicans done that, for the average voter, should cause the average voter to say, yeah, let's keep these guys in office?
I mean, speaking as somebody who likes to see government do nothing, that's what I'm going to say. I mean, over the last years, they've done almost nothing.
Very successful job.
Except the awful things that they were doing that are sort of bipartisan awful things that they like to do: wage war, conduct warrantless wiretaps, that sort of stuff. They've been able to that's continued apace. So, if anything, I would just say that they have not added more wood to the fire. And, I mean, that's not a sales pitch. And I doubt Boehner would use that as a sales pitch, or any Republican would. But speaking as somebody who likes to see both of them mess up often and much, I'm saying that's my sales pitch.
So if your pitch is you don't want the government in our lives, for example, health care, retirement, Social Security, things like that, who do you want there?
Oh, well, I mean... I want God, Tom. No, I'm just kidding. I mean,
if you get cancer, I'm guessing you don't have $1 million in your checkbook.
No, there's a real power vacuum. I mean, like, if you want me to lay out my entire policy plan, it would be, I mean, I think there are ways to make healthcare cheaper without the system that we have in place right now.
But if you get cancer, you don't have $1 million in your checkbook. You have a choice. You can either have government, which is answerable to you, or you can have private health insurance companies with CEOs like Stephen J. Hemsley, who made $1 billion.
I don't think the answer is what we had prior to 2010 and what we have now. I don't think those are the only two answers. They may be what were politically convenient, but I think if you saw licensing reform at the state level, if you saw the expansion of medical school programs.
Wait a minute. You want to do for medicine what we did in the 70s, what Nixon did for credit cards? Let everybody go to the lowest common denominator, so everybody moves to North Dakota.
I think America would be a better country if we had more doctors. And as of right now, we can't have more doctors. There's a cap. There are two giant bodies in the United States that have
AMA.
Caps.
That's got nothing to do with the government.
AMA, no, that does have something to do. AMA does not make laws. Congress makes laws on AMA's behalf.
Well, I mean, we're getting a little bit away from the issue.
I mean, this is a little bit away from the issue, but the AMA is not a governing body. It is a private body, and it Congress answers to the AMA, and that's a problem with lobbying. I agree that's a problem with lobbying.
Yeah, but no, I think there are a lot of people in Washington who mean well and want to, you know, enact reforms, whether it's reducing the size of the federal government or whatever their objectives are, and simply because of an entrenched culture here in D.C. that sort of trades on the favors that come along with being in power, you know, it's very, very difficult to do. So I think.
So how do we? So if we're all in agreement, even though we would like different sizes of government, and different kinds of government, but we're all in agreement that government is corrupted by money, are we?
By sorry,
is consensus by money.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, I know where you're going with this, but I'll say yes.
Well,
yeah.
No, I'm not going to, you know, public funding of elections or something. If that's where you think I'm going, I'm thinking there are two doctrines that no president has ever suggested, no Congress has ever suggested. In fact, presidents have been decrying them since Thomas Jefferson, and that is that money is not property; it's speech, and that corporations are not legal fictions; they're people. These are doctrines that were literally created out of nothing by the Supreme Court, one of them in the late 19th century, the other in the 1970s. Why don't we just blow these up?
Well, I'll speak to the corporate personhood doctrine first. You know, if we say that corporations are not protected by the Bill of Rights, by the protections in the Bill of Rights, I mean, what you're essentially doing, you're eliminating due process for corporations.
Not true.
The government can go in and tap company phones without a warrant, can seize company property on a whim. You know, these are the types of things that, you know, the Bill of Rights does protect corporations against those sorts of intrusions. So, you know, I think we need to be careful advocating for no constitutional protections for corporations, which seems to be what a lot of people who are opposed to the Citizens United decision
are doing. If you are an individual working in a company, the government can't talk.
No, but we're talking about company property. So go on your computer. My computer at my desk is fair game for the government to hack
into. Shouldn't
it be? No, not at all. There needs to be some expectation of privacy.
Why?
Okay, so let's keep in mind.
It used to be
that Citizens United did not just apply to corporations. It implied to nonprofits. We're talking about the government being able to go to the AFL-CIO, the ACLU, the Sierra Club, and tap their phones and seize their property.
Shouldn't all their books be open?
To any government intrusion on a whim, on a politician's whim?
Absolutely
not. How about we talk about opening their books when the government opens its books? I mean, let's look at the number of FOIA requests that have been rejected. Almost twice as many FOIA requests were rejected in Obama's first year in office as were in Bush's last year in office. I don't want to hear, I find spiels about transparency radically disingenuous compared to the administration we have right now and the opacity in which it operates.
And this is a tendency that's been increasing ever since the 70s, and I'm with you on that.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, last question, quick fire. We haven't heard much about the Tea Party in the last year or so. The question, is the Tea Party dead? Or will billionaires like the Kochs bring all those buses out of retirement and revive the thing in 2012, just in time for the elections? Are we going to see, you know, a couple of dozen of these $300,000 buses run around the country in October?
I mean, those buses were there to transport people who were wanted to get on them and wanted to get around. And so I don't think it matters.
They didn't want to pay for it. They wanted the billionaires to pay for it.
How much the buses cost, how many you have, because I don't think there's going to be anybody to get on them. My sense is that the Tea Party is pretty disillusioned. I mean, they elected a giant freshman class in the House, which, with the exception of just over a dozen approved reauthorization of the Patriot Act, some of the people who were elected as Tea Party candidates have sort of just, they've taken up the banner of big government. I mean, Alan West said that repealing Obamacare was an issue for him. Marco Rubio gave a speech at the Brookings Institution today saying that he thought the United States should be more interventionist than it is right now.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine that the Tea Party feels like its efforts are being rewarded.
Well, and Lachlan, to some extent, the Tea Party is discovering that the guys that they sent to Washington, D.C., are gung-ho on weird social agendas that weren't even discussed back in the day. And secondly, that they want to privatize Medicare and Social Security, which is freaking out the Tea Party people. I mean, is it buyer's remorse?
If you want to see Tea Party influence, I think it's probably better to look at the local level, local and state levels, than at, you know, you saw a lot of precincts.
What are you seeing there?
Well, I mean, you see precinct chairmanships being taken over by people that share that common agenda. And I think, unlike the Occupy Wall Street movement, for instance, which sort of rejects the two-party system, I think you saw very much the Tea Party decide that the Republican Party was going to be a vehicle as a way to pursue its political ends.
So much smarter agenda.
So they're not branded Tea Party as much anymore as they are just sort of the conservative wing, fiscally conservative wing of the Republican Party.
Yeah. On the other hand, you get the 99% spring, which is kind of doing the same thing now with the Democratic
Party.
The
MoveOn.org backed Van Jones backed 99%.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the same thing. It's let's play inside. Well, anyway, we'll see how it all shakes out. Lachlan, Mike, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.